The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour, sponsored by AIB. Usual crew here on a Thursday. Conan and Connor are with me. Lads, we have to start off by revisiting some quotes from Leighton Glynn, because we had a little bit of a laugh at Leighton Glynn's expense here on the show last week. And we were all a little bit smug and we kind of knew what was going to happen. And Leighton Glynn, we'll revisit the quotes anyways and we'll take it from there, because as it turns out, Leighton Glynn is a bit of a prophet. He says, "We can only play our own game. Win on our own strengths. I know most teams go out against Vincent's and tend to flood the defence. That wouldn't be our style at all. We'd never play defensively, double mark a player, and I think it would be crazy to go out with that approach. This is the interesting part. We feel we've good strength around midfield, and if we can stay in the game for the last 10 minutes, hopefully that strength will come true." James Stafford, 1-2, gets a late goal from midfield. They were strong around the midfield. His plan worked absolutely to perfection, lad. Stay in the game for the last 10 minutes. James Stafford will pull something out of the bag because we've got a good midfield. Listen, Leighton, 9 times out of 10, we would be right. But you got us on this one. And we were wrong. I don't know. I won't say we were wrong to laugh, because 9 times out of 10, you were 16-1 on to lose, Leighton. But listen, this has worked out well for you and we're giving you the credit that you deserve. So congratulations to Ratnew. Blown the Leinster Club Championship wide open. Made every Portlaoise supporter sick to the stomach walking out of Emore Park last Sunday. And it's brilliant, brilliant thing to see a shock like that. We don't get it at inter-county level. And it was just a beautiful thing to see it at club level.
Yeah, you're saying we were wrong. I don't remember me and Conan actually saying anything about it. You said we're not going to talk about it because Vincent's are going to win, and let's leave it at that.
You laughed along with me, lads.
If you'd given me a couple of minutes, I was going to say I fancy Ratnew to win in the last 10 minutes when they throw James Stafford into the full forward line.
Ockram is a difficult place to go as well, lads. We did not factor in the Ockram factor, which is obviously it's worth 10 points to any Wicklow team, club and county. We know that.
Another victory for taking teams on as well.
Exactly. Listen.
Skin and bones, yeah. They're tired, they sweat.
It's another lesson for Ulster football, Conan. Yeah. Listen, this is the list is growing longer.
Except it was Vincent's and not Dublin.
Well, it wasn't too far off Dublin versus a Meath maybe, or a Leash or whatever. Alright, Dennis Bastic, lads. You have to give Dennis Bastic a shout out here. He's retired. Can you believe he made his championship debut at 28? Lads, and I've been mentioned on this show before that Dennis Bastic got a trial for Leash in 2004 and couldn't make the Leash panel, right? So Dennis Bastic didn't give up. He floated around Dublin squads in and out of them, didn't make them, made the one and all Ireland junior, stuck in there. Actually, Conan, I can't believe you don't rave about him. He's an inspiration to every player. Like, you were the old romantic, which you must absolutely love this man. He waited at 28, stuck at his game, got his break, waiting for it. He still hasn't made it now, because when he got his break in 2009, he was played full back and he was atrocious full back. He didn't know how. I remember I was on Hill 16, I think it was for one or two of the games that year, and I was actually doing a player cam on Bastic full back, and we were jeering at how poor man had no idea how to play there. So then still didn't get disheartened, still stuck around, and ends up making a team regularly at midfield, 5 All-Ireland senior titles, which, like, I mean, if anyone deserves 5 All-Irelands, it's Dennis Bastic.
It's a man who's
hung in there
through it all. Refused to be backed down.
Refused.
In the face of adversity, just kept playing. I need to get back to the office.
Why did he get a try with Leash? His
family from Leash. Yeah, there's actually a brilliant picture. I'm going to tweet it out from the Twitter account at the GAA Hour. It's Dennis Bastic hanging out of the front window of a car with a can of Budweiser in his hand, with Leash colours on him after we won the Leinster in 03. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture. Have you seen this one? No. It's outstanding. Like, so that's going to be our tribute, GAA tribute to Dennis Bastic.
Would I be right in thinking, like, Leash had a better team than Dublin back then?
They did, yeah. In 03, yeah.
What, Clancy, Garvin?
Clancy and Garvin. So there wasn't really a place for him, and he didn't really stand out in the trials. Actually, I think it was 04, because I wasn't there. I don't remember him. I missed some of 04. It was 05 maybe he got the trials. I think I was in away travelling. But I actually don't remember him at the trials, but it is fact that he was down there at trials. Mikko was looking at different fellas with connections. He was kind of, you know, searching for fellas with granny, the granny rule.
Jack
and he was
Charlton.
Yeah, he was doing a Jack Charlton on it because he thought maybe we needed an extra couple of players. But that was the story. So he played right up to the 2015 All-Ireland final. He started that and everybody thought maybe that'll be the end of Dennis Bastic. But Jim Gavin obviously, you know, thought highly enough of him that he wanted to keep him in just for the leadership qualities. And I suppose when you see the tributes from all the Dublin players yesterday and they're talking about how inspirational he is in training, how he'd elbow the back of the head off, you know what I mean? He brings that competitiveness to training and he has that value that Jim Gavin probably told him, you're not going to see game time, but we need you in there for what you bring to it. And again, to talk Dennis Bastic up, to accept that for two more years after being on the starting team is another measure of the man.
I remember being really
good. It's the leash. You see, this is the leash connection, lads. This is the thing.
That in the 2013 final, so I think Bastic is 36 now, so he would have been 32 then against Mayo. And in that game, Aidan O'Shea came into that game like he was having the season of his life. He had absolutely ruled the roost against Donegal. And the Dublin midfield just ran the Mayo midfield all over the place.
Yeah.
And Bastic was brilliant. And I remember him setting up the goal for Bernard Brogan at the time. So yeah, he was no spring chicken at that stage. I think he was 32. So to stay in the squad, stay as an integral part of the squad throughout his early 30s into his mid-30s, just a testament to him with all the talent that would have been coming up in Dublin in that time, you know.
Yeah, I think it was Keane O'Sullivan that ran Aidan O'Shea around that day, was it? Over and back to
Queens. Yeah,
they were
both in midfield, yeah, yeah. So it was kind of a tandem effort.
But there's been videos there doing the rounds. I think AIG released a couple of videos and one was of Bastic like in the gym. And again, you love this. You love it. You love a rags to riches story and you love a gym bunny story. He was doing all these mad pull-ups and chin-ups. He looks like a fella who is just, you know, a naturally fit fella who loves staying in shape. And I suppose staying in on the squad for the last 2 years, not seeing game time, it's probably his lifestyle to enjoy being fit. You know, it wasn't putting him out too much,
yeah.
Maybe.
Again, there's that clip going around as well, 2011, playing Kerry in the All-Ireland final, and he gets cleaned out. He's going for a high ball, he's cleaned out in air, he's on his back, and he does like a ninja flip just straight back onto his feet. Like just
like the Rock.
Supreme athlete.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. So listen, Dennis, congratulations on a great career. And you might be getting a phone call off me sometime soon for maybe a little bit of punditry work. So just giving you a heads up when you see my number that you might let it ring out or you might answer it one or the other.
His diet off him as well during the week.
All right, lads, GPA salaries. Colm O'Rourke had a piece in the Sunday Independent and I thought it was very interesting reading. And it was about the GPA and where they get their money from. Well, we know that already, but he kind of broke down the figures that their total expenditure last year was 6.14 million, right? So the main income for that expenditure came from the GEA, 2.8 million, Sport Ireland, 1.6 million, and they were able to generate 644 million themselves. So you're looking at that total expenditure figure of 6.14 million. And I think what just kind of jumps out at me is the salaries that they pay themselves. So they're obviously there as a player welfare department of the GEA now. They're not a union anymore. Whether they call themselves a union or not, I don't care. They're not, because they're being funded by the GEA. So they're not a union in the sense they can go head to head with the GEA because they're compromised. They depend on funding from the GEA. So I don't think it's out of order to call them a player welfare department within the GEA. They're part of the GEA, they're funded by the GEA, and they do some good work for GEA players. I think a lot of it, some of it is a waste of time, some of it is potentially good. I think the most important thing facing players is championship structures, and I think they've been a complete waste of time on that particular subject, to the point that club players around the country have had to start up another organisation to actually take the GEA on and force through some sort of change. Now, we have to remember they only represent inter-county players, but inter-county players are club players, and you have the Dublin senior footballers going out playing club football last year 4 days after winning an All-Ireland. So, like, I mean, that's not protecting their players either. They've done nothing on that. But their total wage bill, lads, was 921 million. So you're not far off 1/6 of their total expenditure they're giving themselves. Now, this is handouts they're getting, and they're giving 921 million to themselves. Now, which is bizarre. So that averages out, they've 12 employees, that averages out 77,000 each. But there is payments to key management, which was down. And they don't say how many key management they're talking about, but if you have a total employment force of 12, mm-hmm. Colm O'Rourke is saying in around 3, couldn't be much more than 3, 490 million lads. 490,000.
What a salary.
But like, I mean, I'm near flabbergasted by that. Like, I mean, what are they doing now as a small welfare department within the GEA to command that kind of money in salaries? Like, it's unbelievable.
Well, not only that, but that figure is up something like 120,000 yeah. in the last 2 years.
So the key management have got a raise of 120,000 between 15 and 16.
So in 1 year that's gone up by 120,000. Yeah. You're saying yeah. 3 people.
That's a serious yeah. raise. That's, we don't know for yeah. sure that's 3 people, but in a workforce of 12 key management, you know, you're looking at maybe, I don't know, 3 people, whoever yeah. In and around that kind of figure. Which, like, I mean, lads, think about this for a minute. So this is player welfare. So they're getting GAA money for player welfare to help players, and they're giving a little bit under 1/6 of it to themselves. Like, I don't understand this. Like, that doesn't really make any sense to me. Not only that, our players are given €50 membership, inter-county players, to the GPA, right? Which was grand at the start. They were an independent organisation, completely independent of the GEA, and they needed some sort of funding. But now the GEA is funding them to the tune of 2.8 million. Why do players need to pay membership? They already pay membership to their clubs. They're GEA members. This is a department of the GEA. I don't understand why players still need to pay €50 membership a year to an organisation that is funded to the tune of 2.8 by the GAA, 1.6 by Sport Ireland, and are given 1 million almost to themselves in wages. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, how do players stand for this? I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I suppose I'm trying to understand exactly what the role is completely. And I know you have some experience with them. As Colm O'Rourke was complaining about the nutritional cost, which I don't really, like, nutrition's a big cost for players, so yeah. I think there's a lot of money going towards
that. But should that cost be coming from the GPA as opposed to respective counties themselves? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask Willie, like, what did you get from the GPA?
Well, I didn't see one dicky bird from the GPA. I got a grant of €1,000 when I went back to DCU to college. And in fairness, I was really appreciative of that. And I think that's one really good thing that the GPA do, that if you want to go back and help yourself with education, they will help you out yeah. towards that. But they only help 1% of GA players, but that's their brief, you know. Like, I mean, my issue is, like, how much money are they spending on mental health? And I know you can get on that mental health bandwagon, it's obviously very important, but like, how much money are they spending on that and gambling and all that kind of thing when the Samaritans is there as a free charity, where that's a phone call you can make? But the GPA seem to be all about this mental health and gambling and all these important issues, but there's already help there, you know. So I don't see what necessarily that is a huge, like, how much money is going on something that's already there, you know? Or is this to justify their existence, or is it good PR? I don't know. But the Samaritans is a free charity that you can pick up the phone at any time
yeah.
for anyone in the country. Mm. So I don't know. I think sometimes they hide behind some of these things. I think they do some good work. Like, I mean, I don't think that should be taken away from them, but whether the work they do is worth 921,000 in wages annually, I don't think so.
It's interesting you pointed out as well, though, that you got the grant towards your college education, because one of the points that Colm O'Rourke was making was that in his autobiography that Jason Sherlock mentions that he yeah. was thinking about going back to college, and Dizzy Farrell just happens to mention it in conversation. Oh, have you ever thought about getting a scholarship?
Yeah.
Because Colm O'Rourke's point was, I wonder how much the hurler in Monaghan or the footballer in Leitrim knows about that. He was kind of bringing it back to his kind of argument about yeah. elitism.
A lot of issues I would have had with the GPA would have been around, remember when the Club Energize sponsorship deals came out at the start, and there were a big billboard with different players. Like, I mean, Jason Sherlock and Senan Connell, two of Desi Farrell's clubmates, got them. Like, they were a big deal at the time. Like, two of his clubmates. Like, Senan wasn't even a big name on the Dublin team. Like, I like Senan. But, like, when I saw that, I was like, ah, come on. Do you know? And I remember one of the early GPA meetings. I was a member. I was going to these meetings, and they got someone over from the PFA in England, and they talked about, say, if I did a sponsorship deal on the Leash panel, right? And the Leash panel are all members of the GPA. I would maybe get half of that money from the sponsorship, but the rest would go into a pool for the rest of the panel. So there's not one individual earning out of the GPA, but everybody feels that we're all part of this same union. That never transpired. Like, I mean, I think Corey Clancy or Ross Munnelly got that billboard and none of us saw a Dickie Bird, and we were given the same 50 as everyone else. So I never felt I was in it together with the... It always looked to me like big names were making money out of this GPA, buddies of buddies were making money out of GPA, and I wasn't seeing a Dickie Bird outside of a hoodie. So, like, I kind of turned against it, like, says, this is just a kind of elitist thing. Not only is it elitist that is 1% of the whole GEA, but it's elitist within the GPA membership as well. So I don't know. I thought that kind of bowled me over when I saw that kind of money that they're paying themselves. And, like, I mean, I think the GEA need to have a serious look at where their money is going, rather than just saying, here's 2.8 million, spend it whatever way you want. Like, I mean, you know, 921,000 of that 2.8 is going to that small welfare department. And, you know, where these payments are going, like, I think the GEA needs to have a little bit more control over where that's going.
Yeah. In your case, like, your one case study yourself is very important, because you're an intercounty player, half decent. Like, you know, but you're doing all the training, you're doing, like, whatever it takes to get into the team, and you should be feeling the benefits of the membership that you're paying for this organisation. It's supposed to soften all these blows. Yeah. And even the transition then, when you finish playing for your county, what happens then in the afterlife, I suppose? Like, that's what the GPA thought was supposed to be about, for making life a little easier for guys who are giving so much of their time to an amateur organisation.
Yeah, and I think, just, I don't want to mention names, but the Jason Sherlock, the way that came about with Desi, just casually throwing it out to him, and Colin Work was saying that was cronyism, and that was kind of the way, like, I contacted somebody there and said, I'm going back to college, what can you do for me? Oh, we'll just apply here. And, you know, I ended up getting it. So I don't know, maybe if you have to maybe contact them and apply for it, maybe just, it wasn't casually kind of said to me, which would have been, and that was Colin Morrock's point. Yeah, it was casually said to Jason Sherlock that he has that kind of, and I'm not being smart, a good few of the Dublin players, I saw Ross McConnell, Barry Call, Dennis Bastic, Jason Sherlock, there's a few more, have all availed of that 12 and a half masters, I'm pretty sure, or at least of those grants. So, you know, it's definitely interesting, and it's definitely something I think the GAA should be keeping their eye on. Right, lads, Tipperary have pulled out of the McGrath Cup this year. They're not going to take part in the McGrath Cup in January. So Liam Kearns said that they're going to focus on the league throughout January. And, like, I mean, this makes so much sense to me, and I was tweeting this out and got a lot of support on Twitter from different people saying that, you know, the league now is starting a little bit earlier. The intercounty provincial championships are starting a little bit earlier. You need that January to train and prepare for what you're going to play. You don't need to be trying to tug teams out on a Sunday for meaningless nonsense. They're a nuisance now. And, like, they're a nuisance to the point that Dublin go on holidays in January, Kerry go on holidays, Donegal played their under-21s, Kerry played their under-21s, Dublin played their C team. Nobody cares about these. So why are they still there? Why not give that the year a little bit of breathing room in January? Let your few college lads train with your college maybe once a week. You know, keep that ticking over and show the Sigerson Cup respect. Personally, if I was doing a championship year, I would start the league in the end of February, and I'd let the Sigerson Cup end before I'd start that league. And that would be perfect. And forget about this April month for clubs and just play it on through. But, like, even give that bit of breathing room for January, you know, because no, they're just a waste of time. You wonder what the motivation behind keeping them is at all.
Yeah, because there's only a week now between the end of the... I was just looking at the FVD league games. I think there's five in the space of 3 to 4 weeks at the start of January, and then you're straight into the league. And then by the end of the league, then you're meant to play with your club for a month, and then it's championship. So, like, good luck to whoever can fit all that in.
Yeah, we always said we want more games. Yeah, but, like, this is taking the piss, right? Because, like, I mean, people come back to me on Twitter saying, well, one or two people saying, well, players want games. Like, you're not showing no understanding. Yes, they do. But within reason, like, I mean...
Just to play a devil's advocate, though, would there be a few players in a county that they have no opportunity to prove that they might be willing of a place at the panel for a league?
I don't know. Well, I tell you this much, right? Because I see these same fellas with leagues trotted out every January, and they're like lifers. Like, I mean, they'll be trotted out, they'll play, and this is a dog's life, lads. And I have a first-time experience of this, because when I went back playing with Leash in 2011 under Justin McNulty, I had given up playing with Leash for 2 years when I was with Parnells. So when I went out back in 2011, I'm not sure McNulty really fancied me, but he asked me back in anyways. So I was back in looking at this O'Byrne Cup to impress McNulty, right? And this is a dog's life. I hadn't played since the end of September with Parnell, so it was 3 months not training. Like, I went back in, did a bit of physical training with Leash. I wasn't 3 months not training. I was 3 months without having played. So this Burn Cup game against Wicklow was my first game in about 3 months. And I had to perform to impress McNulty. And I didn't perform and impress him. Like, I didn't play well. But, like, I mean, these are Burn Cup games. Look when they're coming. And look at the gap from when a lot of these players will have played last. They're not even a good shop window for them. And there's too much pressure on them.
Yeah.
And I always remember the same fellas who were all right players would come in for those games, they would get those games, they would get roasted, and the whole thing would start the following year again. So I can't remember too many. Usually players that make squads, they're known in Leash anyways. You don't have to perform in that one-off game in the freezing cold temperatures, not even in the county grounds, in one of the other club pitches. It doesn't all boil down to that one game. That's not going to make or break. So I don't even believe that kind of theory, that's what they're there for.
Yeah, and you're not playing with the best team either.
You're playing with stragglers.
Like, the only thing, though, I'm not playing devil's advocate this time, but, like, surely Tipperary will be playing games. If they didn't want to be going to Division 2 with no games under their belt, and the only way to get fit is by playing games. Like, you can run all you want, but once you play your first game, it hits you like a brick wall, and it's something you're not used to at all. So they will have to play a game or two somewhere. It might be a friendly. Should they not just play McGrath Cup?
Yeah, they might play play one friendly in the month. But then for the other ones, your whole management team have to go, on that Sunday, and they have to prepare on the Saturday. And it's a bit of a nuisance. You'll have two or three games anyway. So, like, I mean, they might try to get one when it suits them, rather than we have to do this day. Like, they might want to train on weekend in January. That might be a good opportunity to get away. You can't. You have to fulfil this pick. I'd say it's just a nuisance for a lot of them. But I do take your point that they would probably want one game before the league starts. But, like, a lot of these internal games now, they're kind of using them, and that's kind of enough. It's definitely an instrument. And look, to be honest with you, if they're the only ones pulling out of these, who are they going to get the challenge game against? They'll have to play a college team or something like
Kerry,
that.
Kerry have pulled out of it as well, have they? The McGrath Cup, I think.
Did they pull
I
out
think,
of it as
I
well?
I think they've pulled out of it too, yeah.
I can see this happening more and more. The year's too intense now. It's too intense. You need that January. You need it for good, solid weekend work where you've got the daylight hours to work on football. Mm. And you can't get that on the Tuesday and Thursday. You fulfil these pictures or these fixtures. That's your weekend gone. So, like, you're not getting the good quality work on the Saturday and the Sunday, maybe. That's what these counties want in the daylight, which is probably the most important factor there. Lads, I want to talk about Masters football, right? Because David Durkin, Sligo player, he's complaining about this, and he's complaining about his disappointment that the GAA's refusal to sanction the over 40s competition. And I couldn't agree more with David Durkin, right? I'll tell you why I couldn't agree more, because I got a text a couple of months ago from Danny Doug. I don't know if either of you remember Danny Doug. You might be a bit young. Danny Doug was a great Leash minor back in 96 when I was gracing the minor fields. But the text was, "Woolly, make sure you're ready for next year. We'll all be 40, 96 minors. We're going to go in for this Masters thing." So I was thinking, that'd be nice, really, to get back with all the lads and play in this. And then you kind of read this, that it's just a bit of a farce of a competition, that the GAA don't even recognise it, even though they're bringing bloody hurling teams over to Fenway Park for a bastardised hurling game, and they're doing the same, bringing it to Australia. And they won't kind of sanction an over 40s competition with players who have represented their counties with distinction. And, when you hit 40, to be able to almost have a reunion with all the lads you played with and go one more time against over 40s. I think it's a beautiful thing. And not because of the Danny Doug text. That kind of maybe highlighted my reasons for kind of looking into this. But, like, I mean, it doesn't make any sense when you look at what they're focusing on to maybe give this a little bit more of a, I don't know, profile, or at least recognise it as a competition.
It'd be huge for supporters as well. Yeah. Like, it was just on TV. Like, Enda Muldoon, my favourite ever footballer, has just retired from Ballinderry, 23 years.
I was wondering when you get that in.
I'll have my notes here, but I don't need the notes. But everybody knows what a player Enda Muldoon is. Not going to get into it, but, like, he's 40 now. You're thinking, he's retired from Ballinderry, retired from Derry 5 years ago. Wouldn't it be great to watch him now just plucking balls out of the sky and spraying passes again? And I would definitely tune in to watch him and a few other legends beat the shit out of the leash lads.
Hey, what about Derry, your leash? You have to get the better of Mayo,
who record
title holder is at Masters level. Yeah,
Mayo are flying it. You see, when it's not recognised, that curse doesn't work.
What the GAA need to do is recognise the Masters competition as the main competition, and Mayo have that problem.
No, but the minute the GAA recognise this and sanction this, the curse kicks in. The curse only works like if this challenge games. The curse is okay for. Like, I mean, that's it. So, how many have Mayo won? They've won
ninth
title.
But just the players that were playing in that game at the weekend. For Sligo, you had Eamon O'Hara, you had Desi Sloane, Paul Taylor. Like everybody knows these players. Aidan Higgins was playing for Mayo. Kenneth Mortimer was on the bench. Fergal Kelly played in a couple of All-Ireland finals. He was on the bench. And it was just, I was reading Joe Kane, who's actually, he was a brilliant player for Cross Maloney. He's part of Stephen Rochford's management team. He was saying that, he was giving out about it as well. And saying that the thing is now, players are fitter now at 40 than they used to be. So it's not like these fellas have just been drinking for 10 years and then go playing football. They're producing a decent standard as well. So no more than yourself. Like I just always know whenever you ever see them kind of legends games that are on Sky Sports, you see the fellas that used to play for Man United or Liverpool back in the day. They're indoor, but they're a bit of crack. And I always watch them when they're on because you're just familiar with these players. So I agree. I don't know why they don't sanction it. I think it's an insurance issue, but. I know they should be doing all
maybe
the best
something
for Motor,
like that.
I think.
And I think last year Galway won it, like with Joyce and Savage and Donnellan and all that brilliant 98 team. You know, see, like you'd love to see these teams going up against each other. Anyways, it would be nice maybe if the GAA do recognise their own, rather than going over playing these kind of weird games and trying to hope that, I don't know. It seems like an ego trip. And look how brilliant we are. Look what we do. I rather look after the lads from home. Rather than that. Anyways, another one for you, Conan, just before we finish up. And this is what the GAA is all about, which you love. The romantic
ticking
that you
all
are.
The boxes for Conan today.
If you're not a rags to riches Dennis Bastic, this you love this one about John Heslin. So now that we know John Heslin is a freak when it comes to personal tallies. And he's carried on that form. We saw the goal in the county final after 15 seconds. It was absolutely sensational goal. I would probably have some issues with my midfielder for not tracking John Heslin. But, like, I mean, at the same time, to stick it away like that was unreal. So he scored 1-7 last week when Lomans beat the Longford champions Mullen Ahachta. They came back from 5 down late on in that one. And, you know, 1-7, John Heslin sometimes reminds me a bit of Cora Staunton. Like, we just kind of look at that 1-7 and think, oh, it's John Heslin. Yeah. You know, you don't even register how much he tallies up on a regular basis. But anyways, the county chairman was talking to the Westmeath Examiner. And he says, when I went down to the dressing room, this is after the game. So everybody's gone. They've kind of won. And he heads back down to the dressing room anyways. And he says, when I went down to the dressing room, I found out it was John Heslin, captain of St. Lomond's team. He had a sweeping brush and he was cleaning and tidying the dressing room after everyone had left. I said to him to leave it, that there'd be men coming in the morning to clean up. But he said no. This is what I wanted to do. Conan has tears in his eyes here. He said everything was in a basket tied away. And he and I walked out of the dressing room onto the dark pitch. Now it's dark now. It's just painting the scene that we're just walking. There might be lights from the dressing room. Just kind of, a single floodlight. Just kind of, you know, mapping their path across the dressing room. And they walked off together. And John headed on down the road to celebrate with his teammates after cleaning off the dressing room.
I know we're laughing, but I actually have a good time.
Right, we'll be back with Zach Toohey.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D right at home by where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me.
Out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
We are Geelong, the greatest team of all. We are Geelong, we're always on the ball. We play the game as it should be played. Fly high from north to north, down at Cardinia Park.
Yeah, that song can only mean one thing. Zach too, he is on the line. Zach, I bloody loved that song after playing it, hearing it for the first time last year.
Catchy, isn't it?
It's very catchy. Yeah. It's very catchy. You know it off by heart now. You said last year you were going to have to learn it.
I do. We've had a few wins, thankfully. Probably had more wins in the last year than I had in the previous couple combined. So it's going well.
Yeah, it's going really well. Like, I mean, you came third in Geelong's best and fairest. So, like, I mean, you really couldn't have done much better than that.
Could have come first or second, yeah. It was a great year. I'm not sure if this time last year was a nervous time. You never know how these changes are going to go. It seemed like a really good idea at the time, and thankfully it kind of, you know, it proved to be one of the best moves I've made, I think.
Yeah, because we talked even about bringing your game to another level, and really you've done that. Like, I mean, you haven't even missed a minute of you've played the more minutes than any teammates in the whole year as well.
Yeah, and I mean, as you well know, any high-end kind of competitive sport, you need a bit of luck on your side to keep your body fit, but I've had my fair share of luck with injuries over the last few years, and that's all you can ask for, and I've been able to, you know, stay out there for as long as I can.
So what was it like settling in there?
Yeah, big change. I have a young family, I guess, for those who don't know, and that was always the biggest part of moving is how they were going to find it. But Geelong is a relatively small town outside of Melbourne. Now, relatively small is 200,000 people, but much less rat race than Melbourne, and for somebody with a young family, I mean, that's ideal. So happiness off field seems to have translated into some good form on field.
Yeah, definitely has. And even with your teammates and stuff, because I'm leaving me out of this, but transfers in the GAA are not very common. So, like, it must have been a bit of a weird feeling moving from Carlton to rivals down the road.
Yeah, it hasn't happened at all, really, or very rarely for Irish guys who've come out here. It's not generally, you know, it's not something we're overly comfortable with, and I certainly found that the closer the decision came, while I thought I'd be comfortable with it early doors, it really unsettled me towards the end of the trade period over here. But look, as I said, your priority is always your family, and fortunately for me, I got to kind of tick the family box and tick the football box altogether, because we're both very happy where we are.
Yeah, so it's basically like me joining Stradbally, what you did, right?
Yeah, sure. Not quite that bad now, but...
Nothing's that bad, right?
Nothing's that bad, no.
come here, has your game changed then since you've moved to Geelong? Or, you know, has the new coach tried to, you know, ask you to do more things? You're still an attacking wing back, but has he added things to your game?
Yeah, I'm basically playing the same role. I probably have a bit more freedom to be adventurous in terms of the attack side of things, and I've been given a role to patrol the kind of half-back line maybe more than I had, whereas I had been more of a sort of a lock-on, one-on-one sort of guy early doors of my Carlton career, and it was hard to sort of shake that reputation. And when I got to Geelong, the opportunity was offered to me to, you know, be more of a, or try at least, and be more of a sort of a leader and dictate opposition, you know, dictate to them where I want to go. So a bit of freedom, I guess, would be the only way I could describe it, yeah.
Yeah, so it's almost like you were, from being a tagger, which I can't imagine you'd like very much, you have more freedom to go forward, which I'd imagine you love.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. I was always a very honest teammate. I'm happy to do the defensive jobs, but it's way more fun when you don't have to play on anyone. You can just stuff around the ground getting cheap balls.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like, I mean, you're getting paid to mark someone. I wouldn't say you would be too happy doing it in Ireland, doing it for free.
No, I've said, you know, I never played on anyone back home.
Yeah, no, exactly. But you're getting the long-range scores. I suppose the season did end in disappointment. You were pretty much hammered by Adelaide, which must have come as a big shock.
It clearly came as a big shock. You can't prepare for that. Adelaide, for those who don't know, Adelaide in Adelaide is probably the hardest, the biggest task in AFL football. So, look, we knew going into it, it was going to take something special for us to get over the line, but we really thought we were capable. We'd already beaten them this year, and we went out and very poor circumstances. Now we really kind of, well, we let ourselves down. You can't really dance around it. We were terrible.
Right, okay. And like, I mean, when you lose like that, is that kind of tactics getting that wrong or just not performing on the day? Like, I mean, I can't even picture what tactics are in Australian rules because, you know, I don't know the game well enough. At home here, yeah, the game seems to be obsessed with defensive tactics, but I would imagine with the mark over there, you can't get too many men behind the ball like they're doing at home here.
No, you can. There's definitely some similarities. It's a highly structured game. In fact, that was the thing that shocked me most when I came out. But like, as you know, there's some games where the tide's just against you and you keep waiting for it to turn and it just doesn't turn. And yeah, you look back in it, you would have done a lot of skill things very poorly and then kicked the ball to them. And structurally, you know, all those defensive zones, all those lovely fancy words get thrown up. But sometimes you just can't. You just can't stop them. And that was the case that day.
Right, so when you say defensive zones, like, I mean, do a lot of the defenders, even if their man is drifting towards midfield, they're told to keep in their position?
Well, not so much that. You tend to see, if you watch AFL, if you ever get the kind of behind the goal vision where you can see the whole ground, it's more of the whole team kind of ideally would move as an entire unit up and down the ground.
Right.
And get in basic terms, it's get as many numbers in and around the ball within a kick of the ball as possible. And what I led to us was they found too many big gaps in that, you know, in that zone, and they were able to sort of pierce the ball through us and move it quicker than we could run. So yeah, there's a lot to address, but yeah, that was the basics.
Right, okay, it's interesting stuff. Come here, I was going to say you're great to be playing with Ireland on your time off, but is there, like, you were beaten on the 23rd of September, you're not back out in action again until the middle of next March. I didn't realise you had as much time off.
We don't have as much time off. We're back. You get back training fairly quick. We have a very long pre-season is the problem.
Right. When is that?
Yeah. So a lot of teams got back in early November. We're not back till late November, early December, because the first 4 year players, for example, guys who've only been in the AFL for 4 years, come back a couple of weeks before the more senior guys. So, because I've been here now 7 or 8 years, I get the couple of weeks longer. But
okay,
you generally get your 2 months off, and then you're back training mid to late November, and you train pretty solidly until probably mid February, late February, and then you get ready for games. So, not quite. It's not all downtime.
No, it's that's a really long pre-season then. Like, I mean, you know, you've got three months of slogging. No.
Well, at one stage there, and I hope. Don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure for a little while there we were the only major kind of ball sport in the world whose pre-season was longer than their season. So we trained, it's a madness, like, you know, and it's not quite that bad anymore, but yeah, it's not downtime between the end of the season and the start of the next one, I can promise you that.
Right, okay, because it's interesting. Like, I mean, the inter-county season, the complaints here is that it's too long. It's over 9 months. Your season, like actual games, is a game a week pretty much from March straight through to end of September, October, which looks like a nice compact season with games every week. There'd be no complaints there.
No, and I guess the problem is it's a very hard AFL to really play more than that before your body kind of lets you down. You certainly couldn't play more often than once a week, and you know, it's just the only other way you could do it is there's 18 teams. You can't exactly play everybody twice, because if you are limited to one game a week, then all of a sudden there's, you know, 36 weeks, and then you put finals in on top of it and it gets too long. So I guess this is just what they decided was the reasonable length. So yeah
okay. And come here, what's the interest like in the international rules out there this year? Like, I have to say the interest here isn't that much, Zach, because the first game wasn't shown here. It was shown at 5 a.m. So, like, an awful lot of people wouldn't have seen the first game. So it's not like the appetite has been whetted too much for the second one.
Yeah. And that's, you would think that was a bit of an error on someone's part. But
yeah.
Look, there is some interest. I'm not sure what the crowd, there was about 20,000 people, I think, at the first game. I've heard people say high 30s, maybe even 40,000 at this next one. And the stadium only holds about 45, I think. So, I mean, that'd be a huge turnout. To be fair, the Australian team is chock full of big name players. So, in terms of putting out a competitive team, they're finally doing it over the last couple of years. And yeah, I'm not sure. It's gathering steam a small bit, but there's always naysayers when it comes to the international rules.
Do you know what I think I was saying on the podcast for the last couple of weeks is that it's missing a bit of spice. Everybody's too nice to each other. There's no kind of, like, I know we don't want to see the violence of 06 and Graham Geraghty getting stretched off. We don't want that. But you'd still like to see a bit of sledging, a bit of hitting, a bit of dislike between a rivalry developing. There doesn't look it. They look almost like kind of friendly games.
I can understand that. You don't want it too sanitized. Nobody wants to see that 06 stuff back. But if you're being honest, that's probably why a lot of people went to watch it. And there is a bit of there's nitty gritty going on during the games that maybe you can't see, and that kind of defeats the purpose of it, I guess. But it's just finding that balance. But I think the more competitive the games get, the closer they get. It's kind of only inevitable. You would think a lot of that grit will come back. There's a bit of worry now that might spill over and maybe go back to the old days, and that could be the end of it. But I don't know. I feel like if we give it a bit of a chance, the rivalry will build as long as both teams keep putting out competitive sides. So we'll see.
Yeah. What are you like within that Irish squad now? I presume you have to be a big leader there with your experience in Australia.
Yeah, I suppose I've a better understanding of how the Australian lads like to play. So I've been voicing my opinion as much as I can. But they're highly professional lads that have come out here. And they've all got their own opinions. And yeah, look, I've tried to tell them exactly what I think they'll play. And I think we got a fairly good understanding from how they want to play from the first test. It worked fairly well for them, but it was pretty clear what they were doing. So we've kind of no excuses going into the second test, but we'll see.
Right, and with such a talented Australian team, like, their skills with the ball look to be fairly good.
Yeah, they were. They were pretty good, I think, last time they played as well, though. So last couple of tests, I think their skills have been fairly good. But that's just, the onus goes back on us. Their skills are good, but if we put them under enough pressure, their skills won't hold up the same way ours will. So as long as we don't let them have the time that they had at stages during the first game, there's no reason their skills should look particularly capable.
Yeah, it must be weird for you when the Irish teams come out every couple of years. There's a whole crew of fellas that you would have never met before, and you'd have no idea. You wouldn't really know them. Like, I mean, are you following the Irish game, or is it difficult with the time difference and to know these lads' games before you meet them?
Yeah, no, I don't follow it as closely as perhaps I should. I was talking about this actually with a few of the lads earlier on. When I first came out, I actually found it really hard to bring myself to watch it because, you know, I miss playing club and county football so much. I had Satanto Halpine with me at the time, and he was the same. His first 2 years here, Cork won the All-Ireland in the Hurling, so he'd miss that. And I remember him telling me he just kind of had to try and zone out and almost forget about it. And I probably went through that as well. And when it came time for me to start getting back into it and wanting to watch games, it was kind of hard to watch because Laois weren't exactly blowing teams off the park. So
yeah,
I probably don't follow it as closely as I should.
Yeah, every year I saw more quotes from you again about Laois, and you're saying, I'd like to go back and play with Laois at some stage. I've never played championship football with them. And it seems like your yearly interview that you want to play with Laois. This is just teasing us, Zach, because you have, like, I can't even picture a scenario when you can actually play with Laois. You'll be 33, 34 when you finish over there. Are you really going to come back to Ireland for a year then just to play with a team that potentially could be in Division 4?
Nah, I'm just leading you on, keeping you strong along. No, look, I do. The truth is, I really do want to. And you're right. But I think in those interviews, I've also said, I want to play with Laois provided my body lets me. And there's at least a reasonable chance my body won't let me. So that's just the reality. Like, but no, it's not. It's not stringing anybody along to say, I want to play for Laois. Definitely want to play for Port Laois again. That's almost guaranteed, I guess, because I think the time constraints will allow for that, maybe more than county. But no, I definitely want to go back and play for Laois as long as I'm physically able.
Yeah, and are Geelong a little bit more strict? I know last year you couldn't come home for Port Laois because you obviously hadn't signed a contract, and that would have been crazy. But this year, were Geelong a little bit stricter on going back to play?
No, God, no, not at all. Last year I didn't play because I was kind of between jobs, and an interview at that time, more than any other time in my career, would have been disastrous.
Yeah.
But this time, like, as I said, I have a young family here. It was just more, we didn't have it in us to put ourselves through the trip again and all that kind of thing. I was actually looking forward to just having some downtime here where I could just unwind and not really have to worry about travel and stuff like that. So it was a pity. I mean, there's also the financial, you know, there's three of us going over and back twice a year. It adds up. So it was kind of, I don't know, the time just felt right to maybe just have a break from going home. And I mean, I've been out here 8 years and I've gone home nearly twice a year every year. It's not many young lads can do that. So I just took the year off. It wasn't anything to do from Geelong's end.
All right, okay, fair enough. Just finish up with, because there's a lot of Kerry fellas will be listening to the podcast. What's the update on Mark O'Connor? How's he developing? And, you know, any news on him?
Yeah, unfortunately for them, he's absolutely flying. He's had a stellar first year. To play AFL in your first year is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And for a young lad, he's incredibly, like, switched on. And speaking to a few of the Kerry lads on the team here, I think he's been like that for a while. Really diligent. And again, I'm sorry to say for the Kerry listeners, he doesn't seem to be too homesick just yet. So I think he might be without him for a little while longer, which is great for us and not so good for them. But nah, he's gone unbelievably well.
Put that into context then, Zach, making the senior team in your first year. Who's done that? You know, like, did Colin Begley manage to do that with Brisbane Lions?
I'm not sure now. I know Michael Quinn played very early in his first year. I think I could be wrong again. I don't know, like, when the likes of Jim Stein's way back, I'm not sure when they started, but in the recent era, I'm not sure it's happened outside of those two. But and look, we were a very strong team this year, so it was a hard team to break into at the best of times, and never mind doing it off the back of playing four or five games for your life. So he's remarkable. He's an incredible athlete. Like, he's one of our fittest guys, and judges the high ball really well, which is something I picked up on really early. But it doesn't happen playing in AFL in your first year. It just doesn't really happen. Like, so it's phenomenal.
Yeah, Jesus, unbelievable stuff. Finally, you're 10 points down, and that 10 points obviously sounds like a huge big deal, but then I was reading this morning, I'm not sure who said it, it's just 1-1 in a game of Gaelic football, so like, it's not even much of a lead at all for 80 minutes.
It's nothing really. Like, I mean, we'd like to have the lead ourselves, but yeah, it sounds like a lot more than it is. It's a couple of quick points early in the game and all of a sudden you're back to square one. And I mean, you've 80 minutes of football left, as you said, so it's not exactly a mountain, but you wouldn't want to let them blow it out any further than that all the same.
Yeah, no, that's true. Fair enough. Listen, Zach, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us. We'll talk to you this time next year again, I'm sure, our yearly catch-up. Hopefully you'll be first in the best of fairest. You've only two more steps to jump up there.
That's all. Simple.
Talk to you next year.
Thanks, Willie. Bye-bye.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans, beans. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans, beans. Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
AIB, backing club and county.
All right, lads, big hurling weekend this weekend, which won't suit either two of you, but luckily enough for you, we have David Breen coming up to help us with some of the hurling. First off, on Saturday, of course, the Ireland versus Australia is on in Perth. That's at 8:45 a.m. So there's no excuses why we won't look at that. Like I was talking to Zach Toohey, there's only 10 points in it, which is only 1-1 really in GEA. So, like, I mean, if you're 1-1 down going into 80 minutes, you wouldn't think that's insurmountable. So 10 points is nothing either, and I'd imagine why we've been down on it last weekend with the 5 a.m. and even Zach admitted that was a bit of an oversight. There'd be no reason why GA fans won't be tuning in to watch this one.
I don't know how it was an oversight, you know, with a year or two to prepare, like, and as you said last week, Connor, two countries to just keep happy. But yeah, no, it's definitely one that I think most of the country will get up. I think the viewing figures for the last one, expectantly low. It was 39,000, an average viewing figure on TV that watched it. So
really?
It's pretty poor, but I'd say this one, it's probably good.
It's like Sky viewing figures there, really, isn't it?
It's probably,
now, Artie, you know how Sky feel.
It's probably good that Ireland are 10 points down. It adds a little bit of interest now, and you know that we're going to go for it. And see, Darren Hughes has joined the panel as well, late. So
Kieran Sheen as well, actually. Is
Kieran Sheen's in there as well, yeah. Darren Hughes actually got the call. He got up at 5 a.m. to watch it. And obviously, Hanley was and it broke his wrist, and he tried to go to bed after it, and the phone rang. So then he had to organise a flight the next day and everything. So he must have been in an awful state when he landed over there, between waking up at 5 a.m. to watch it. We won't suggest whether he had a pint or two, maybe stay up. We won't say that. Maybe he set his alarm. But then obviously getting up at 5 a.m. wouldn't say he went back asleep then after that. And then he's organising flights, and well, I'm sure Ireland did that, but he would have been getting out ASAP. Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see. I'd say Darren Hughes, he's made for that game as well. Like,
I mean,
you'd imagine
he wasn't in the original panel.
No,
to be honest.
I was surprised too, but Scotstown, and they went to a replay, and he had to give his attention to them. So he would have probably made it. Only he had to tell Joe Kernan that, look, I have to give my focus to this. So the minute they got a chance to get him out there, I'm sure they did. There's also a Leinster Junior Football Championship final between Multi Farnham, Westmeath is a club I haven't heard of before, and Éireann Rovers, which I have heard before. That's in Cusick Park at 2 p.m. Sunday the 19th of November, Killarmacullohy, the Offaly champions. A whole load of fellas from Killarmacullohy going back in to commit to Offaly this year. Don't know if it's a whole lot, but it's three or four anyways under Kevin Martin. So might get Kevin Martin on the show soon and talk to him about all that. They're playing Mount Leinster Rangers of Carlow. Fancy Killarmacullohy there, probably won't be much in it. Then Coola play St Martins in Parnell Park at 2 p.m. So it's the Leinster semi-finals. There's also a football match on Sunday, Derry Gonnelly of Fermanagh and Cavan Gaels. An absolute snore fest after extra time, I was reading last Sunday. 12 all after extra time, so we can picture how potentially that went.
And you thought defensive football was
hasn't filtered out the club yet. So that's at 1:45, and that's in Clonus. I'm pretty sure the first one might have been Clonus as well. Connacht Club Intermediate Football Championship, Michael Glavies of Roscommon and Claire Galway of Galway and Hyde Park. Connacht Junior Football Championship final, Lahardan. Jesus, these clubs are bloody junior clubs pulling out of nowhere. I should read this before I actually come to air. They play Ballymote, which is very, very easy, from Sligo and McHale Park. Munster Junior, we're nearly at David Breen here now, lads. Munster Junior Club Intermediate Hurling Championship, or Munster Club Intermediate Hurling Championship final. Please be easy. Kilmally, lovely events against Kenturk, and that's Anthony Nash's club. That's in the Gaelic grounds at 2 p.m. But the one we are going to concentrate on is the Munster Hurling Championship final on this weekend between the Pearshig and Ballygunner. It's a huge, huge game. I'm delighted to say David Breen is on the line to help us look at this one. David, you're on some run in Munster. You're unbeaten since 2011.
Yeah, it's pretty nice stack to have. Look, we never really thought about it that way, to be honest. But we seem to do well anytime we get outside of our own county. All right, that's the tricky part, is winning your own county.
That always seems to be the way. And what is it about Munster then? Just the pressure's off you, and you can kind of loosen up a little bit.
I think so. The first one we won in 2011 with Sean Sack over us, and he always maintained, you know, as soon as we get that monkey off the back and we win our first Limerick Championship, that, you know, we could just go out and express yourself and just hurl freely. And I think, you know, I'll see maybe better quality pitches and probably, you know, kind of you'd have it refed in a way that's probably maybe more county standard as opposed to club standard. So it's I think all those things make a difference.
Yeah, you mentioned there that was your first ever club championship title in 2011, your Limerick title. Like, I didn't realise that till this morning, until I was doing a bit of reading. You'd never won a county championship before 2011. You've now got three Munster clubs. You're third on the roll of honour in Munster clubs. You've an All-Ireland club, and you've kind of got this record where you're unbeaten in Munster. It's been an incredible 4 or 5 years for you.
It's been massive. But look, we've been kind of breathing well for a while before that. You know, we'd been winning underage titles then, and we managed to win under 21 title then and kind of push on from there, but we just couldn't. Our first county final was 2009, and we got an absolute humiliation, to be honest. It was an embarrassing defeat, and I think that's something that really stuck in the minds of a lot of the players at that time, and we just kind of promised ourselves if we ever got back there again that wasn't going to happen again. So you know, like, yeah, we've been winning underage titles as well, but just trying to win that first one was the tricky part. But yeah, ever since 2011, then, I mean, if you've kind of got to a stage where you're at a certain level and you're not there by fluke, then it's about being consistent. And I think, you know, in the following year, then we were beaten. And then in the following year, in 2013, we won it again. And yeah, it was just trying to prove that it's not a flash in the pan and you're a decent team.
Yeah, you're on a year-on, year-off kind of thing. 11, 13, 15 and 17 is back again. You're back on your on-year again, David. But, like, I mean, and it's not called the toughest for no reason, because when you get a run, obviously, with the club, win county titles, win Munster, the year drags on into the following year. And I know this from experience myself. It's so hard to be back that next year at that same pitch, especially maybe after losing, it's hard. After winning, I'm sure it's even harder.
Yeah. Mental, like, we probably talk to death at this stage, but the length of the GAA championship is ridiculous, you know. And you know, if you look at any other sport, you wouldn't find a season like it, you know, especially for the teams like that now at this end of the year that have been successful, or it just drags on and on and on. And you know, if you're finished even now at this time of the year, the county lads are going straight back in, or you know, they might have a couple of weeks grace and then they're back in for kind of pre-season training for next year. So it's like, you've all of those factors to deal with, and on top of that, you've the whole kind of psychological factor of you know, trying to you know, defend your title successfully the following year, but you've got every other club that really want to take it off you as much as they can, you know.
Yeah, just quickly, I know you mentioned that Adair County final, and that was 2009. You were beaten 117 to 3 points. Like, I mean, that's some turnaround then for 2 years later, your Munster Club Champions. Was that pretty much the same bones of the same team, or did that just come a little bit too early for you, or you got an injection of new players in?
It was a combination. I suppose we had one team that kind of, you know, we're at the end of their era. They had got us up from intermediate up to senior, and you had a lot of boys there that were kind of in their final year or two, and then you'd a big gap in the middle where there was a big age gap, and then you had maybe myself and the likes of Kevin Downs coming onto it, and a couple of more boys that were really just kind of fresh enough onto it. And yeah, so there was a big gap there, but then we were adding to the senior panel every year we had a couple of more, and with guys that were coming through the underage Limerick system, you know, representing Limerick for minor or 21, that were kind of graduating onto their senior club team. But yeah, it was like, that defeat was really the catalyst to bring us to where we are. I think, you know, sometimes we still talk about 3 points in a county final is pretty hard to take, and it was hard to swallow. I think probably the biggest thing that stands out with me is Kevin Downs and got the only point from play in that final, and we had a load of ironic cheers that came up from the stands from the opposition supporters.
Oh,
and
man.
It was something that I'll always remember. I know a lot of other boys will always remember too. And in fairness, like, we swallowed it the following day, and everyone got on a minibus and went out to Adair and went out and shook their hands, you know. And I think that was an important experience as well, for all the boys just to really soak it up and see what it was, you know, really rub salt in the wound, I suppose, you know?
Yeah, so you're 5-4 favourites to win the All-Ireland, actually, so I'm sure when you see the young lads getting carried away, that 3 point defeat, or the defeat only scoring 3 points, can be brought up and put thrown in their faces maybe.
Ah, yeah, you can be brought back down to earth very, very quickly, and odds and any further stages in championship advantages that I talked about, and if they are, we wouldn't be long to to give sides a clip around the ears, just keep them on point, you know.
Yeah, come here, David, you have an interesting story yourself. Like, obviously you were on the Limerick team in 2013, but you had to give up playing intercounty hurling because of your career. You were a physio with Leinster and now you're a physio with Wasps, so, like, I mean, I'm sure the commute for intercounty level is impossible, but you can manage it for club.
Yeah, well, just about anyway. I wasn't really expecting to be still playing when I made the decision to come over to Wasps. And obviously, you know, you're in Dublin when you're at Leinster, and it's, you know, Limerick's only two hours away on the motorway, but when you're over here, it's a different story. And never mind trying to find a hurling wall or find someone to poke the ball back to you. So the management were pretty sound about it. They just said to me, they kind of put it back on me, really. They said, look, if you want to, we want to have you, if you want to keep playing and keep putting your hat in the ring. And that's the way we kind of just took from there, really. I got back earlier on in the year, and the first match I got back for, actually, I broke my ankle in the second half. So I arrived back over into Wasps with in a boot and crutches, which didn't go down too well.
I'm sure.
I was kind of a couple of months recovering from that as well. So in fairness to Sean Neal and Alan Cunningham and Kieran Birmingham, like they've been dead on and given me every chance.
Yeah, I was trying to Google Wasps GAA clubs to see who you might be togging out for keeping fit with, and there's not too much coming up. So, like, I mean, you must need an awful lot of discipline out there, then, David. Like, I mean, to do it on your own, and we all know hurling, you have to have your eye in, and you have to be practicing with the ball an awful lot. That must be really difficult.
Yeah, I suppose I was in this situation before 2009, 2010. I did my masters in Edinburgh. And similar enough, I just thought, you know, that I might be packing it in for the 2 years I was in Edinburgh. But Justin McCarthy was over Limerick at the time, and he just said, look, if it's a thing that you're still willing to fly back on the Friday and fly back out on Sunday night or Monday morning, then we'd be interested in keeping it going. So I kind of had the experience of training myself, Willie, you know, but it's, and also the environment you're in, where you're working with professional players and you're trying to practice what you preach, I suppose, and you should have everything at your disposal. So look, it's a mental thing. It's, you know, when you finish work, it's about getting the boots on and getting out onto the pitch and doing your fitness and then trying to get one of the lads to poke the ball back to you from behind the goals and stuff like that. So that's the thing that was in my control, and all I asked for from the management was that if I told them I'd be fit, that they believe me. I didn't have any preconceived notions just because I was living in another country, you know. Because, you know, it's easy to think that too, you know, that the fact that you move away or you know, you're not training with the team, that, you know, automatically think that your hurling goes down, or your fitness goes down, or your, I don't know, whatever, you know, whatever it slides. But the fact is, I suppose the boys have no idea what I'm doing over here, and they've kind of put their trust in me in that respect.
Yeah, but you're smart to have actually put that down, that out there, that do not have a preconceived notion that I'm unfit. You know, you kind of have to plant that into their heads before the start. That can seep in. But come here, like, you're obviously very good physio if you're getting in with Leinster and getting in with Wasps. Like, your hurling career must really help with that dressing room dynamic, because I know physios down through the years, some of them are a little bit awkward. You know, they just don't know that dressing room culture, whereas you can just seamlessly, you know, pop in there and it not be a big deal, I'm sure.
Yeah, I suppose they wouldn't be too familiar with hurling over here, but they know, I suppose they respect the fact that you've played at a decent-ish level in your sport, and that you're still playing, and that you still, you know, they know that you train yourself and things like that. So I think they have that respect from one sportsman to another, and think, like, GAA environments can be every bit as harsh as a rugby one too, especially when things are heating up in a dressing room or a half time, and you just gotta know what to say and how to say it, and sometimes just say nothing at all, you know. Particularly with guys that get devastating injuries or they're out for 6 or 9 months, and handling their mental state at that time, you just gotta try and be on the same page with them, you know.
Yeah, would you have to be pretty forceful with some of these fellas who want to go back out? We know the rugby lads go back out, it's more of a doctor thing with concussion, but, you know, they play on through bad injuries, whereas that's obviously not the done thing to do, where you might have to put your foot down with some of them.
Yeah, and it's not their call, really, you know. I mean, it's like any of us, you know, when someone comes on and they want to take you off, you don't want to go off, you want to stay on the pitch. But to be honest, it's your responsibility to make that call, and it's, you know, the head coach is putting that responsibility on you, because they're not medically qualified, the player's not medically qualified, you have to make that call, and if they stay on the pitch or like that, especially with concussion, could be your job on the line, or you know, the player could be putting themselves at serious risk of further injury. So a lot of the time it's just heat of the moment where the adrenaline is up and you might get a bit of a puce off a player at the time, but I think 9 times out of 10 they'll come up to you in the dressing room afterwards and say, yeah, do you know what, 100% is the right call, or yeah, I can feel that stiffening up now, I can hardly walk or whatever, you know. So
yeah.
You know, it's you know, at the time you just have to be pretty firm with them, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Come here. Just this might be a bit of a stupid question, but when you're back home then playing with Napiershig and you get injured, we know you broke your ankle earlier this year. Do you have a physio working on you, or will you kind of diagnose yourself and you know maybe do a little bit of work on your own, or do you mind another physio working on you?
Yeah, well, to be honest, we're all fairly gassed at the end of the day here, so I just try and beg, borrow and steal a bit of time off any of the physios over here that still have any energy left in them. So, but you should, yeah, to be fair, you should be known about the rehab it yourself and the do's and don'ts of the injury and stuff. So it's just, yeah, trying to get a bit of treatment on the bed and in the physio room. Just have to maybe pay back a few favours to a few people, but
yeah,
it's a good environment to be in for those kind of things. All right.
Yeah, doing that friction work on yourself isn't ideal. You kind of give up after 30 seconds when you have to do your own.
No, it's not ideal. Yeah, you just need to be given a stick or something and just bury your head.
Yeah, exactly.
In the bed and tell him, yeah.
Come here, you've Ballygunner at the weekend and you obviously beat them in the final 2015. You had a brilliant second half, but they're coming really strong as well, you know. So, like, I mean, it is the game of the weekend and I'm sure, like, you know, your favourites to win it, but there won't be much in this one.
No, definitely not. Like, they're a well-seasoned team, you know. They know what they're doing at this end of the year and this stage of the competition. They've been here before, so... You know, they're well drilled and they look to be, you know, they've had two very, very close games in the quarterfinal and the semi-final of Munster. So that's bound to stand to them. And they've had a huge run of games before that too. So I don't know, for me anyway, I think, you know, the more games you get, the better. You can always tailor what you do midweek to recover for the following weekend. But yeah, they're... You know, they've got plenty of experience and it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, it's always these hindsight things. On Monday, if Ballygunner win, they'll have had momentum, and if Ballygunner lose and you win, you'll be fresh and they'll have been tired. So before the game, it's hard to make the call which is better.
Yeah, I know. But look, that's all outside of our control anyway. We just kind of get our own preparation. Like 2 weeks is a nice break between games, and yeah, we've got absolutely no excuses.
Yeah, exactly. Right, well, listen, David, thanks very much for taking the call and best of luck in the match on the weekend.
Great. Cheers, Colm. Good talking.
All right, that's it for this week. We will talk to you next Thursday. Good luck.